Oh, Lloyd. Felt good last night.
It really did.
It felt like we were exercising some demons is what we were doing.
And it seems like it was like a complete kind of game. I mean, everybody worked in the game. I mean, everybody was doing their part in the game. It was really a team effort, I thought.
David Montgomery showed up again last night.
Yes.
That was nice to see.
Uh-huh.
You need him. You know, you can't lean on Gibbs every single play.
Or Montgomery, yeah. What's the other guy? Amon-Ra.
I mean,
if he had a bad ankle, it
didn't look
bad.
Like it. looked like he prayed on that ankle and there was a miracle. But he looked really good. I mean, Isaac Tesla scored
it
last night. So, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about like where they were going to need the contributions from, and they got them from a plethora of different players. So that was really nice to see. Defensively, look, you're going up against the Cowboy team. Dak Prescott is not a scrub.
No, he's not.
You know, he's a good quarterback. Mm-hmm. Yes, he has struggled in his career, but for
the
most part,
some pressure, a little bit of pressure.
Yeah, and that was another big part of this too.
Yes.
But they're going to get theirs, right? You know, you have CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens. They've got playmakers. So, it's not like you're going to limit them to 200 yards passing.
No.
Right? But defensively, I thought they did a nice job.
I think everybody. It was a true team effort.
And started up front, like you said. They generated much more pressure than they have in recent weeks.
Yes.
Which was great to see.
The penalties, though. And I know the coach talked about that as well, you know. But some of those calls, how come every time we play Dallas, we get some screwy calls?
There's just something. There's something with this team. I don't get it.
I don't get it.
You know, there was that one play where it was very obvious, you know.
Offsides. Offsides.
And no flag. And Jared Goff's like, what are you talking? I thought I had a free play.
Right.
The three guys jumped offsides of your offensive line, your defensive line. So, whatever. They win the game 44-30, and they needed that one. It was a much-needed win. And Dan Campbell said that they overcame a lot to get to this point.
That's a good win. That team is hot. It was a hot team coming in here. That's a potent offense. And, you know, was it perfect? No. We still got some stuff that wasn't good. You know, we had some of these penalties. We had some young guys that we got to clean some of this up, you know, false starts, stuff like that. But we overcame a lot. And that's what this team does. So I'm proud of them.
Well, and they overcame a lot in crucial moments.
They did.
And you overcame a lot at this point in the schedule, right? It looks like a Christmas tree on ESPN's scheduling website.
Yeah.
It's green, red, green, red, green, red, green. I mean, they have been bouncing back and forth between, you know, some decent games, some ugly games, and last night was a nice one. So it was good to see.
And one good thing, too, is that they have 10 days now. They can get a little rest, maybe heal some folks, you know, to get a little stretch, a little extra stretch now.
Yeah.
Before they go in to play L.A.
Yep, L.A. on the 14th. It's a 4:25 kick. But, again, L.A.'s a very good team.
There they are.
They're rolling.
Yeah.
So, again, these are must-win games going forward.
And you know, we're going against them.
The schedule compresses a little bit.
Yeah.
The temperature rises a little bit. So,
yeah.
Were you going to say the Stafford?
Yes.
The Stafford effect?
The Stafford effect, too. It's like, yeah, we gotta show him every time we play him.
Yes. 1,000%.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, so yesterday, one of the things that I was watching was for the admiral who ordered the strikes on those drug boats.
Yeah.
Well, Admiral Frank Bradley appeared in a closed-door classified briefings. Lawmakers were conducting an investigation into these reports that he followed up on a second strike on that first drug boat that they targeted back on September 2nd, that Hegseth ordered a second strike.
Yeah.
Well, according to Admiral Frank Bradley, that never actually happened. Senator Tom Cotton, who heads the Senate Intel Committee, Bradley was very clear that he was given no such order to give no quarter or to kill them all. He said that there was never another order. There was never another order for another strike.
Okay.
For the second strike. The order was basically destroy the drugs, kill the 11 people on the boat, is what Representative Adam Smith, the top Democrat on the House Armed Service Committee, said. So that Pete Hegseth didn't actually order the second strike, that
it was, in fact,
Admiral Bradley, who the order was eliminate the boat.
Okay.
Eliminate the drugs, eliminate the runners.
Gotcha.
And so it took two strikes. So Admiral Bradley took those two strikes. So that's what came out of that yesterday. Also, we heard
they hit another. You know, they did another one yesterday.
Yes, they did. Yes, yeah. They did. So they're not backing down from it.
No, the 22nd strike, and the strike against the boat allegedly carrying drugs is the first strike in more than 2 weeks, brings the total kill to 86.
The Pentagon also released an Inspector General's report on, again, Pete Hegseth's use of that Signal app, remember?
Yeah.
When they were going to take those actions, and it was Mike Walls who accidentally, inadvertently brought in a journalist from the Atlantic into this Signal chat.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about what seemed to me at the time war plans.
Yes.
They pushed back on that. The administration did, but it was war plans. And this strike that was carried out successfully in Yemen, everything went fine. There were no casualties. Everything went according to plan. But the Inspector General's report said that indeed there was a potential that you could have put U.S. soldiers in danger, that the operation could have been leaked and, you know, exposed the United States.
Yeah.
And you could have blown the mission. And so I guess you always want to make sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's.
Sure.
Especially if you're going to be relaying this type of information on this type of platform, which is a secure, encrypted type of messaging system.
Because it was recommended use wasn't in the past administration.
Well, the Biden administration said that it was best practice. They released a best practice report, and they said that if high-level government officials are communicating with each other, Signal's a great way to do it.
Okay.
My point is, though, that never should have been the guidance then. This isn't a government-issued, you know, piece of technology.
Exactly.
So, to me, that's great. It's encrypted. You feel safe about it. But I don't even think that that should be happening in the first place.
It should. It shouldn't be. And I think, of course, in this situation, this latest situation, the journalist being on there is, I mean, that's what kind of blew it up. Because if had he not been on there, he probably would not have known about
this. Right, right. It's problematic, to say the least.
It is. A last-minute deal keeping a historic downtown Detroit apartment complex open and 40 residents in their homes, the Leland House, talked about that earlier this week, has reached an agreement with DTE to pay $57,000 by December 8th, ensuring power won't be shut off and the building remains occupied. The settlement comes after the owners had already agreed to pay $43,000 toward outstanding electrical bills, and it arrives just a day before residents would have been forced to leave. A court hearing scheduled for December 4th approved the deposit and a statement that Leland credited attorneys and Harmon Partners in Birmingham for securing the funds, emphasizing the commitment to protect the residents' health, safety, and welfare. The dispute began after missed repair deadlines prompted a public nuisance action and residents received move-out notices the day after Thanksgiving. Negotiations have been ongoing in bankruptcy court to prevent the shutdown. So they were given a notice the day after Thanksgiving saying, hey, you guys got to be out by December 3rd. I don't care where you go, just got to go. And so you got people who've been living there for years. It's like, I don't have anywhere to go. I got an apartment full of furniture and stuff. How am I going to move that so soon? Because they were behind on the electric bill, $57,000. It's not a good time to be behind on them, because if they shut the lights out, it's a wrap.
Right.
You can't stay there, right?
And that's not the tenant's fault.
No, absolutely not. I'm sure they're paying their rent, doing what they're supposed to do. It's just the owners.
It feels like a pretty opportune time to send that to court.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're in bankruptcy. They filed for bankruptcy, and so they're in bankruptcy court.
It's a mess.
It is.
Meanwhile, you've got Dan Gilbert's Bedrock looking at potentially constructing a marina near the Renaissance Center.
Yes, sir.
Now, the plans for the Renaissance Center doesn't sound like that's going to be able to take effect anytime soon. You're looking at least 2 years out.
27.
After the NCAA Final Four comes to Detroit in 27.
Right.
Why? Because they need the Marriott's hotels.
Yes.
So they can't just all of a sudden start this construction and then wipe 1,200 hotel rooms off the map.
No, they can't
do it.
No.
So they're going to wait for a couple of years here, and then they'll be able to start the process of revamping the riverfront there, revamping the Rensen, but then potentially building a marina there.
That's going to look great, man.
I think it's fantastic. It's a great idea. All right, we'll take a break. We mentioned Admiral Bradley testifying to members of Congress yesterday on that initial boat running strike that was carrying drugs from Venezuela. What he said, we'll talk to Austin Gullett, the retired lieutenant commander and former Navy intel officer, next here on JR Morning. So Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley appeared before a series of closed-door meetings yesterday on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers were looking into this report that the Washington Post initially reported on in that first drug runner boat strike all the way back in early September. Turns out there were two strikes on that vessel. One took out the vessel and most of the people, but there were two survivors still on that boat that were clinging on board. And another strike subsequently was ordered. And the question was, well, who ordered the strike?
Right.
Was it Pete Hegseth or was it somebody else? Well, in this case, Admiral Frank Bradley says that he ordered the strike and there was no such order given above him, meaning from Pete Hegseth, to order the second strike. Austin Gullett's a retired lieutenant commander and former Navy intel officer and joins us here this morning. Austin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So what do you make of what Admiral Bradley testified to yesterday? Tom Cotton says that it was very clear that no such second order was given.
Yeah, I think it goes back. You know, I trust Admiral Bradley. I think if you look at his body of work, he is uniquely qualified, naval officer, Navy SEAL, decorated combat, to lead SOCOM. And I think he's uniquely qualified and experienced to lead these elite operations. And so, you know, I always assume noble intent until proven otherwise. And Admiral Bradley's body of work is you know, I hold in high regard. So it was a tough decision, but I think, you know, Admiral Bradley did make the decision. We in the military, we command by negation, which is a concept where a subordinate officer acts on their own initiative, and their plan is only overridden if a superior issues a negative command or veto. And this avoids operational and tactical micromanagement. The other end of that, you know, the Russian military was quite the opposite. They've known to micromanage through the years, and so this concept came out after World War II. So I believe that, yes, the strategic guidance was given, the rules of engagement were in place, the intel was collected, and I believe Admiral Bradley, you know, made that decision himself.
Austin, Admiral Bradley reportedly believed that the survivors were trying to continue a drug run. Operationally, what evidence would a commander need to make that call?
Well, what I saw is that the two survivors were using electronic communications and potentially to a mothership. And you see this a lot in drug running and smuggling because a lot of times the cargo is very expensive. And so that's why, you know, you see it floating a lot, you know, it's wrapped so that it's buoyant. So that if there is a mishap, even, you know, before these kinetic strikes, if something happened with the vessel, mechanical failure, the mothership or support ship could come and recover that expensive cargo. So, I thought that even before I read those findings. So that appears to have gone into Admiral Bradley's sort of calculus. And also just the way we purely in the military define a threat is capability plus intent.
Okay.
Obviously, they degraded the ship's, the boat's capability, but it appears the intent was still there.
So you've got the administration saying that they don't need Congress's authorization to utilize military force against these drug boats. Lawmakers haven't given that authorization. There are some lawmakers that want a full accounting of what happened on this strike. How does these situations that the United States finds themselves in with these drug running boats, how does that differ from other operations that we might see from around the world where other strikes have been carried out?
Right. It is unique. I mean, our traditional wars are, you know, fought on land, you know, one force versus another force. And this is, you know, as technology advances and as there's, you know, more and more, you know, high-tech full motion video and unmanned, you know, vehicles that can launch these missiles without humans, you know, being at risk, it, it opens up, you know, new questions and new things to think about. And I think, you know, Admiral Bradley and SOCOM, that we could always be a little bit better, be a little bit sharper. And I think regardless of if, you know, there is any wrongdoing here, I think as war sort of progresses, and we always need to assess and make sure that we're, you know, maintaining our moral imperative. And so this is unique that it's, you know, newly named narco-terrorist. It's in open water, and it's certainly unique to our traditional warfare.
Austin Gullett, always appreciate your time. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you. Y'all too.
Yeah, you got it.
Bye.
Did you also see the Supreme Court cleared the way for this district redistricting for Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Officials in Texas had asked the court to allow the state to use these new maps, and the Supreme Court cleared the way. The decision overturns a lower court ruling that new maps were likely unconstitutional, that they were racially gerrymandered, and the Supreme Court, this came before this December 8th deadline that was put in place, because candidates need to file the run for office in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that date was so important just a few days from now. And so now this is a win for the Trump administration.
It is.
Because this is something that they had sought out to do, and for the moment, at least, that's the plan, that these maps will go through.
We'll see more of these in mid-cycle, you think?
Well, yeah, and I mean, there have even been some states that have turned the idea down.
Yeah, I mean,
Indiana was approached about it, and they said, no, thank you.
Right.
I mean, obviously, California took it to the voters. They approved it.
Yep.
So, yeah, we're going to see. I think we're going to, this might be the new norm.
It might be.
We'll see. All right, we'll take a break. More coming up here on JR Morning. Don't go anywhere. All right, a little bit of breaking news for you this morning. There's a ground stop issued for Delta flights at Detroit Metro Airport due to a possible computer outage. We're starting to see reports of this. That's according to the FAA. Delta Airline departures to and from DTW are grounded currently, as the possible outage is going to cause this is going to be a mess. You're talking lines,
oh, yeah,
check-ins. It is going to be a haul at DTW this morning.
IT maintenance is underway. You know, they started getting, you know, we started hearing about it around 5, and it just started kind of swelling, and now it's a ground stop.
Yeah, so we're working to get some more information on this.
Yes.
But if you're flying Delta this morning, or if you're picking somebody up, it's...
Call ahead. If you're not already there,
call ahead. Pack your patience, because it's gonna take some time.
Mm-hmm.
While they work through this potential computer outage, the HUD secretary met yesterday with the city of Detroit.
Yep.
And one of the things that Mary Sheffield has talked about was affordable housing.
That's a big deal.
And trying to bring more access to people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is the Scott Turner, the HUD secretary, the Housing Urban Development secretary, went to the top of the Hudson skyscraper, looked around, you know, saw Ford Field, saw things like that. Bedrock was there, Jared Fleischer, and so getting a kind of different perspective on the city.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the fact that he's here. I love the fact that Mary Sheffield's working with him.
Yes.
Those are really good things.
Because she says she wants to work with the administration, you know, to get some affordable housing here and make it good for people who need housing. And, you know, she's not opposed to dealing with the administration. Like some people, I'm sure, would like her not to be. But you got to talk to people. And you got, you know, the president is the president, and, you know, and the administration is the administration. You got to work with them.
For sure. Yeah, certainly you do. Did you see this? This is crazy. The world of television broadcasting, of streaming, this is in a constant state of flux, it seems.
It's always something.
Well, now Warner Brothers Discovery is moving forward with an exclusive deal to talk about potentially being acquired by Netflix.
Netflix is doing everything right now.
Netflix is offering $30 a share for the studio and streaming assets, according to sources familiar with the deals. And it also includes a $5 billion breakup fee that they signed with Paramount. So what this bid looks like, we don't really know. Stocks, cash, things like that.
Okay,
not entirely sure yet, because I think these negotiations are still ongoing.
So what would Netflix pick up if they did that?
Well, you're talking about Warner Brothers.
Right.
WB. You're talking about HBO. You're talking about IP like Harry Potter, DC Comics, that
the whole
line.
Universe, yeah.
It would be a massive consolidation. A massive consolidation. I remember back in my day, when Netflix first came out, you know, they were shipping DVDs.
Oh, yeah. They had the machine at the stores, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'd get this red envelope
exactly.
in the mail.
Right.
You'd go online, you'd pick what you want.
Uh-huh.
You could have it for as long as you wanted. You couldn't get anything until you returned it.
Right.
So you watch it, you put it back in the mail, and then you get your next batch. And I remember thinking, this is unbelievable. I don't even have to go to Blockbuster.
Right, right.
I don't have to go to Family View. I don't have to go
Hollywood
to any of these
Video, places. Yeah.
Oh, this is fantastic. How could this get better?
Now when you look at it now, you're like, what was that all about?
DVDs? What the hell were we doing? Messing around with the mail and DVDs? That's
right.
Crazy. So, I mean, look, it does bring into question, though, a little bit, like, the monopolization
mm-hmm.
of this industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Netflix is just going to own everything at some point.
Yeah, football now.
Well, they live stream all these different sports.
You know, boxing now.
Boxing, NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing these live events all the time.
Yes.
I mean, they've got major productions that come out under their title.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's no joke.
Yeah.
They are an absolute powerhouse. I don't know exactly how this would look like. Would you just roll HBO into Netflix and up your subscription fees, or would you keep it separate? I don't know.
Or where they take some shows from HBO and
throw it on
Netflix.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Very, very possibly. The Justice Department isn't commenting on this because there was opposition to this. There potentially is antitrust laws
that would be in play here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there was a letter to Pam Bondi, the attorney general, and Andrew Ferguson, the federal chairman of the Trade Commission, the Justice Department, Daryl Issa, a Republican congressman, that there would be antitrust concerns here, could harm consumers, could harm Hollywood. So, again, you're talking about...
Yeah.
A monopoly here.
That's basically what it is.
And they're saying,
yeah,
we'll pump the brakes. But it's something that they're going to look at. I think it's a fascinating look into what's going on in the world of entertainment, in-home entertainment.
What about this guy they captured who they believe allegedly set these bombs in different places, pipe bombs, around right before January 6th? That was, 5 years ago? And they've been on this guy's case, and they think they have their man now.
So, yes, they arrested somebody yesterday. They had a press conference. I was watching the press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Brian J. Cole, a 30-year-old man.
Yes.
From Woodbridge, Virginia, is who they have apprehended and are looking at here. But this case never closed.
Nope.
Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino, Pam Bondi was there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Leaders of the FBI, leaders of the Metropolitan Police Department in D.C., Jeanine Pirro,
yes,
the U.S. attorney in there in D.C., all were there. And one of the things that I appreciated from that is that the case was never closed.
That is it. Yes.
It definitely fell out of the
public sphere.
Yes.
You know. Yeah.
Yes. But they didn't close the case. And when you look at these pipe bombs that were put in place, they said that they could have detonated.
Oh, absolutely.
They didn't, but they could have.
There would have been a lot of casualties.
And at one point they said Kamala Harris was feet away from one of these bombs at the DNC headquarters.
Wow.
So it's scary. Very,
very
scary.
So.
Very, very scary. And the fact that federal law enforcement never took their eye off the ball
mm-hmm.
is important here, because what we don't want is people to go, that guy in D.C. got away with
it. Wait, I can do it too.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, he's just down the road, basically.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
crazy. So they did catch this guy, which is great news.
I think it's
for law
day.
Enforcement. It was a good day. Yeah,
yeah,
certainly. All right, we'll take a break, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more, what the FBI was looking at, how they finally came across this suspect in this pipe bomb case. We'll talk to Andy Arena next here on JR Morning.
Welcome back to WJR and JR Morning on a Friday here in the Motor City. And for more than 3 years, federal investigators have been searching for the person who planted pipe bombs outside both the Republican and Democratic national headquarters on the eve of the January 6th attack. It was one of the most unsettling unanswered questions from that day until now. Investigators say they've made a major breakthrough in the case. They've arrested 30-year-old Brian Cole Jr., bringing new clarity to a mystery that has loomed over Washington since 2021. And joining us to break down what this development means and where the investigation goes from here is Andy Arena, former FBI Detroit special agent in charge, now executive director of the Detroit Crime Commission. Andy, good to talk with you again.
Hey, good morning.
So, you know, investigators say there were no new tips, just a kind of like a reexamination of the evidence that had been sitting at the FBI. From your perspective, Andy, how often does a stalled case break open that way?
Well, you know, to me, it's kind of like a cold case. You know, you're basically bringing in fresh eyes to look at the evidence, take a fresh look at it. And that's, you know, that's what we're hearing was what happened here. And what it looks like, and you said there's some clarity, but there's also still, it's pretty cloudy, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know a whole lot about this guy, but it looks like a lot of circumstantial evidence, which I'm not saying it's a bad thing if you have enough of it, but there's really nothing putting this guy directly at the scene. But what you do have is some financial records of him purchasing things. You've got license plate readers showing his car in the area, cell tower.
Right.
Data showing him in the area. So, you know, I think this is a pretty solid. And guys, this really reminds me of a case we had here in Detroit several years ago where an individual from the Upper Peninsula left a explosive device outside the McNamara Federal Building.
Oh, I remember that.
And, yeah, you remember that case. So it was kind of, it was very, very similar in, you know, tracking an individual, his movement this way, you know, from the Upper Peninsula, purchases or precursors, and then when they executed the search warrant, what they actually found in his house, which was another explosive device that he was building. So, you know, I think that they had enough for an arrest and they certainly had enough to execute these search warrants. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they find on his electronic devices in the residence that may even bolster this case more.
So what we don't know yet is motive, why it happened. They did say the pipe bombs were active and they could have gone off. And in fact, at one point, Kamala Harris walked by one and was just feet from it. So it could have been catastrophic. How will they determine motive in this case at this point?
So I think it's really going to be what they're getting out of the search warrants that they were executing yesterday. And a lot of it's probably going to be his electronic devices, right? His laptop, his phone, tablets, you know, what was he searching? What was he looking at? Those types of things. And then interviews. You know, very little known about this guy. There's been a few comments from family members. I think his grandmother described him as autistic. So, I mean, what the motive is, I think it's really going to come out of what they're getting from search warrants and interviews they're going to be conducting right now.
Andy, you got some lawmakers who say they want briefings to verify the FBI got the right person. How common is that kind of pressure from Congress during an active case like this?
Well, I think both sides, guys, well, you're going to make this political, and that's really what I don't want to see. If it is the right guy, that's fine. But, you know, obviously it's going to play out in a court of law. But, this is a pretty strong – it looks like this is a pretty strong circumstantial evidence, placing him at the scene, purchasing the precursors, those types of things. And we'll see what they get. We'll see what they get out of these search warrants. But, yeah, I really don't want to see – This case has already been politicized enough, and including the current deputy director of the FBI, there's been conspiracy theories, and we got to get past that and see really what happened here.
All right, Andy Arena, former FBI Detroit special agent in charge, now executive director of the Detroit Crime Commission. Always appreciate your insight. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you guys.
Yeah, and you know Dan Bongino at once said that this was an inside job before he was on FBI when he was a commentator. He said it was an inside job, and now it's different. He's there. He sees the evidence. He doesn't believe that anymore.
Yeah. Well, again, it's good police. I can't believe that there were no new leads in that case.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing to me.
That they just put a new set of eyes, like Andy said, on some information that had been sitting there and went back over it. And those cell phone pings really were a big deal. They said his phone pinged right, you know, at the DNC and the RNC right before those bombs were planted. So
he was like 25 at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, young guy's 30 now. You know, it's a shame whatever happened.
It is.
That led him to that. Meanwhile, a grand jury has declined to indict Letitia James, the attorney general in New York. Did you see this?
No.
The Justice Department's now failed attempt to re-indict Letitia James.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the judge took action in both her case and James Comey's case.
Yes.
And now prosecutors went back to the grand jury, but the grand jury has declined to indict Letitia James. And this was a real estate issue,
mm-hmm.
that she was getting a better deal on her mortgage rates because she was claiming certain properties here and there. And
they thought it was a
little shady.
Mm-hmm.
But no new indictment here for Letitia James.
So what's going to happen with James Comey? Because we still got the whole statute of limitations deal in that one as well.
Yeah. You know, I remember talking to Barb McQuaid the day after that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that she told us was, yes, the statute of limitations is over, but because it was filed before it, and now there's been another legal issue, they might be able to refile it. She didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Also, some breaking news this morning. There's a ground stop issued for Delta Flight, something that we're keeping an eye on, trying to get more information on, out at Detroit Metro. A possible computer outage causing this, according to the FAA. All Delta Airlines to and from Detroit Metro are grounded at this point.
Well, if you have a loved one that is flying out or someone who's coming in, you may want to call ahead to see what's going on. Because if not, I mean, you can expect long lines at check-in and, you know, TSA, all of that. So you're going to have some issues out there, and I'm sure it's messy out there right now.
Well, it popped up around 5 o'clock this morning. The ground stop was supposed to be until 7. There was a 30 to 60% chance, according to the FAA, that ground stop would be extended.
Mm.
Kind of a broad number.
Yeah.
30 to 60%. All right. We'll keep an eye on it because it obviously on a Friday morning, it's busy at Metro.
People are on their way out, man, to have a good time, going to see family, maybe going to the Caribbean.
Are you telling me something? What are you insinuating?
There are a lot of parts of the Caribbean. Thank you very much.
That's great. Also, Lions with a big win last night.
Oh, man.
I mean, it was much needed. We'll get some sound for you coming up to start the 7 o'clock hour. But obviously, Dan Campbell was excited. The team was excited. They played well.
They did.
They needed
everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. It was
a
team effort, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there were some problems on the back end of that defense and that secondary, but that's okay. I mean, you're going against some really good players, so it's fine.
And a team that's hot.
Team that came in hot. Coming in.
You know,
winning
Philly.
Three in a row.
KC, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And again, kind of back against the wall, right?
Yeah.
Like, if there was a time to push the chips to the front of the table, that was it. And they did. They win it 44-30 over the Cowboys. So we'll get some more on that for you. Coming up on JR Morning. Big Lions win last night.
Man.
Big Lions win last night.
We needed it.
I love it because, you know, I said yesterday I wanted them to kind of get in their bag a little bit,
mm-hmm.
like bring out some stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know that they necessarily did that. They had a couple of wrinkles. They didn't run a lot of trick plays.
No. They just played hard.
But what they did do is they came out of the gates firing.
Yeah, they did.
You talk to coaches, well, the run sets up the pass. What is the Lions offense all predicated on? Running the football.
Running the football.
If they can run the football, they can run the play action pass. That's when you get those deep shots across the middle of the field.
Yep.
Jameson down the sideline, whatever it is. That's mm-hmm. how they operate. That's their bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, they came out throwing the football.
Yep.
Throw the football. And then
you can run. And they protected Goff pretty good yesterday.
Yes.
And he needs that.
As that game went along, they got better.
Yeah.
But then they were able to run the football effectively. And mm-hmm. then that opened things up. So it felt like they kind of shook the cobwebs off a little bit. They went against their tendencies and played just a great game. Played a good game. Offensively, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
For certain. And of course, on a victory, well, in this case, Friday, we got to hear the locker room speech by Dan Campbell.
It's a damn good win, guys. We've said it all along. That's the way to show up, man. The way to show up. We do what we want to do and how we're going to do it. You guys showed up. Was it perfect? No. Do we have a lot to clean up? Yeah, that's a good win, man. That was a hot team. Right? And that's one down. We got another one to go after this. But we get a little breather here. We get just a little bit of breather, all right? Which is all good.
They need a little bit of a breather.
10 days.
Get these guys healthy. Give them a couple days off here. Yeah, that's going to do them some good.
It is.
Because always around this time of year, you get condensed schedules.
You do.
They play on Thanksgiving.
And they mean something. And we got these division games, too.
Yes.
The last two are division games.
Yes. So it was a great win. You know, Jared Goff talked about bouncing back after a loss, which is something they do very well.
I think it is a kind of culmination of who we are. You know, I don't think that happens on accident. I think it was, 15 times now in a row, you know, that's happened. Yeah, I don't think it happens on accident, and it's who we are. It's what we believe in. I think, you know, when those losses happen, they suck, but we must do as good a job as any team of learning from that and coming back the next week and putting our head down.
Seems like it.
Yeah. We're going to play Stafford.
They get busy, and now you got Stafford.
You got Stafford.
In 10 days.
Yes.
Not 9 days, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Next Sunday. So, great news on the Lions front. We'll talk to Lomas Brown inside the huddle. Coming up at 8:35.
Detroit music stars Big Sean and Usher, they're teaming up to invest $1 million in the new Detroit Entertainment Innovation Incubator. It's a cutting-edge facility. It'll be inside the Michigan Central Boys and Girls Club. The incubator, set to open in February of next year, will give Detroit youth ages 14 to 24 hands-on experience in music, film, AI, and tech, featuring a virtual production studio, special effects lab, Creators Lounge, and Autonomous Training Center, and an innovative lab. Big Sean, a Detroit native, of course, and Boys and Girls Club alumnus, said that the initiative is about giving local young people access to tools and mentorship so they can build careers in entertainment right here in Motown. Usher, also a contributor to the project, is helping expand opportunities for youth to thrive in media and technology. The incubator aims to combat the city's brain drain and turn local talent into some real economic opportunities in creative industries. Big Sean came from Boys and Girls Club. Mm-hmm. So did Usher. Usher was a Boys and Girls
Club. Oh, down in Atlanta?
Yes, he was as well. So we're going to be talking to Sean Wilson. He's the president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Southeast Michigan. That's coming up at 7:49.
It's going to be incredible for those kids.
It is. Huge.
To have that type of access.
Yes.
Very, very cool.
Michigan Central is just like...
It's insane.
It's crazy.
I love it so much, and it's just, it's very in a nutshell of Detroit now.
It is.
It's a dilapidated, eyesore
mess. Exactly. That was it for so long.
Yeah, it's the diamond in the rough.
It is.
It has turned out to be just an absolute jewel of this city.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you've got Admiral Frank Bradley, the Navy admiral, who was commanding the U.S. military strikes on these drug boat runners in the Caribbean, told lawmakers yesterday that there was no kill-them-all order from Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. And this comes after that Washington Post report where a second strike was ordered on that September 2nd boat, that these two survivors of the initial strike were trying to flip the boat over, were using electronics to potentially
contact
another ship in the area, mm-hmm, that they knew was there,
mm-hmm,
and they were trying to save some of the contraband. So the order that Admiral Bradley gave was for a second strike to, mm-hmm, eliminate the threat. You had Tom Cotton yesterday saying that he was very clear that there was no order given by the Secretary of Defense. And again, lawmakers just want more information.
That's what they're getting. Depending on who you talk to, I mean, some said it was entirely lawful. Some say it's deeply troubling. I don't know. Then the politics gets involved. And, so if they both heard the same thing from the admiral, how do you come out with these two different aspects of it?
Yep, certainly. Meanwhile, there is that ground stop still issued for all Delta Airlines at DTW, both inbound and outbound. It was supposed to expire at 7 o'clock. So we're looking into it. Apparently there was a computer issue, according to the FAA, a computer outage. So they were working on that. They had said that there was a chance that it was going to be extended past 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
So we're going to continue to follow on that for you. But if you're going to pick somebody up, if you're headed out, it is going to be a problem.
It's going to be
a
problem.
So just keep that in mind as you head to the airport this morning. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, we will talk to Mark Fendrick at the University of Michigan, a CDC order on whether the agency should stop the hepatitis B shot for newborns, for babies. It's next here on JR Morning. All right, just want to give you an update on what's happening out at Detroit Metro Airport. They put out a tweet just over 10 minutes ago. Delta Airlines is experiencing a network outage affecting operations at the McNamara Terminal. Delta has initiated a ground stop for its flights while the airline works to resolve the issue. This situation is specific to Delta and is not impacting other airlines at DTW. We will share updates as they become available. As always, customers should check their flight status with their airline before they head to the airport.
Makes sense.
So, it seems like that is going past the 7 o'clock mark.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll keep you up to date on that, because those grounded flights going to and from the McNamara Terminal at Detroit Metro are grounded at the moment.
Yes.
So we'll keep you updated on that. Meanwhile, the CDC Vaccine Advisory Panel delayed a vote on whether or not to change the longstanding recommendation that newborns receive the hepatitis B vaccine within 24 hours of birth. It was marked. There was confusion and presentations from folks who have a little bit of skepticism on these vaccines. And it changes the way that how doctors are administering this, whether or not people want this for their newborns. It has become very murky. So let's talk to Mark Fendrick, the professor of internal medicine in the School of Medicine and a professor of health management and policy at the University of Michigan. Professor, good to have you back.
Thanks, Chris. You never call me to talk about the Lions. It's always about health.
Well, what did you think about the Lions?
I hope the Cowboys got out of town.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I didn't like that no call by the officiating crew on that false start. Initially, early on, I thought, oh, boy, here we go again.
Yeah, always some crap with them.
But we got it done. All right. Well, now let's talk about healthcare since you're here. what do you make of this delayed vote again? It's just causing a lot of confusion.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy what's going on with the advisory committee on immunization practices. I think that to stick with the sports analogies, let's follow Yogi Bear and say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. One of the committee members, Chris, pointed out that the near elimination of hepatitis B in children in the U.S. was considered one of the top 10 greatest accomplishments in science and medicine. And there, as was pointed out, there's really no new information that's been forthcoming on either the safety or effectiveness of this strategy that's been in place since the 1990s. So you can understand there's a bit of tumult going on within the committee and the professional societies of patients and clinicians or typically there as liaison at those meetings to propose their views.
But, you know, Professor, you know, this is a vaccine that's been recommended for newborns for over 30 years and has cut hepatitis B infections in kids by like almost 100%, 99%. Why are we suddenly seeing a push to rethink something that has such a strong track record?
Yeah, you know, as per usual, Lloyd, we're very, very much aligned. There's lots of new information that needs to be considered. And I would think that the committee's valuable time could be spending their efforts on things that are a little more murky than this situation. I think that most people, when they think about hepatitis B, it's transmitted primarily later in life through sexual activity and or IV drugs and other rare things. In a substantial minority of cases, hepatitis B is in fact transmitted from the mother to the baby at birth. And because we are just unable to screen every mother with adequate time to know whether she's a carrier or not, the CDC made this decision in the 1990s, as you say, that let's play it safe and just vaccinate every kid to make sure we don't miss one, because this is a really, really bad disease if you don't prevent it. And again, I see no reason to change the policy.
I guess I'm curious to know what the conversation is between patients and providers at this point. And if this were to go through, would you still have providers that would be recommending this to their newborn patients?
Yeah, one of the more cynical statements that I saw in the reporting yesterday is that some of these new revised things were from the Department of Redundancy, in the fact that they were basically saying it should be left up to a conversation between the patient and their clinician to get the vaccine. That's been going on during my entire 4 decades, Chris, of practicing medicine regarding every vaccine. We don't do anything until we tell patients what they're doing and get their consent. So you know, and we've talked about this previously, that there are some Americans and Michiganders who are, don't prefer vaccines. That's their prerogative. This is a free country. But to make recommendations to populations that generally serve the public health as well as the individuals seems like something we shouldn't change.
You know, a lot of parents will hear about this debate, Professor, and wonder, is the hepatitis B shot still safe for my newborn? What's the clearest evidence-based answer you could give them?
Yeah, you're the one I often turn to you for the evidence, right, Lloyd? For 30 plus years, the evidence has been very, very strong that the benefits of vaccinating newborns and children through the three-shot series for hepatitis B produces tremendous benefits. Has almost eliminated a very serious condition that sometimes goes on to actually cause liver cancer. And the cost of these interventions in terms of the economics and financing is remarkably low compared to other things that we do. So again, I'm always thinking about, I'm going to another sport. They're now where the puck is, where the puck's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
This committee, as well as the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, has typically been motivated to look at what's coming down the pike, as opposed to doing a re-review of a very successful policy over 3 decades old, for which there's no real new information regarding safety or efficacy. If there was a new study, Lloyd, that came out that suggested either the vaccine didn't work as well, or there were side effects that we didn't know of, I would completely condone this behavior.
Yeah.
But there does not appear, and I'm not an expert in this area, but there does not appear to be anything particularly new, as opposed to these skeptics who just don't like the idea of vaccinating a child immediately at birth.
Sports Center host Mark Fendrick joins us here this morning.
Professor. My dream come true, Chris.
That's
my
right. Dream come true. That's right. Appreciate you as always. Thanks for your time. We'll talk again soon. Have a good weekend.
Sure. My pleasure. You too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Here's the problem is you do have people that are skeptical.
Yeah.
You do have people that are curious as to why, these vaccines haven't been tested, or what the reason is, or what the ramifications are if they don't take these vaccines or don't have their kids vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
It's a skepticism that, whether you think it's right or wrong, that is the skepticism that people have. And so you do put doctors in a tough position.
You do.
You do put families in a tough position that want to do right by their kids. Right. And so you do create this kind of storm of, the skepticism, the information that they're getting, and then what they're hearing from their doctor. They can all be conflating.
And then you think about, too, there's a large percent of pregnant women who don't get prenatal care. And so they haven't been going to the doctor. And
right.
they haven't disclosed their risk factors and things. And these babies come and they're not protected.
Yeah, it's unfortunate we're at this spot, but also I think we've gotten to the point where, like for food, for example,
mm-hmm.
I mean, people have for quite a while, there's crap in our food, but they don't really think much of it, right? All these pesticides and all these additives and preservatives and the dyes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, now people are going, enough. Take this stuff out of our food. And that's something where RFK has really spearheaded.
Because you got other countries, they've done it.
Yeah, you get Fruit Loops right over there.
Right across the water.
Right across the water. It looks a lot different.
It does.
Right? And so, the question is, well, then why are all these countries not allowed to put this stuff in their food, but we are? Right? So it's the whole spectrum of health
mm-hmm.
where people are really starting to question. And it's valid to a certain extent, right? What
sure.
you don't want is to put yourself or people you love in a bad spot.
Well, the situation is always different, man.
It's different. We'll take a break. More next on JR Morning. Hey, make sure you help us carry on a wonderful tradition here at the Golden Tower as we carry on Christmas on Us this holiday season. It's a way to honor the dedication and the sacrifice of Michigan's active military families and veterans. Look, they make sacrifices all year for us. So help us ensure that they have a truly joyful Christmas. And so if you know a deserving family who serves our country, nominate them now. Go to WJR.com, nominate them. We would love to highlight the service that they provide for us every single day.
So there's a buyer? We have a buyer?
We have a buyer.
The deal is done?
The deal, as they say, Lloyd, is done.
Okay.
Told you that Netflix was poking around, maybe going to buy Warner Brothers.
Yep.
Well, they've done it. $72 billion in this deal. It splits the studios, HBO Max streaming business from its cable networks, and this is a cash and stock deal. They entered into exclusive negotiations this week, really in the last, 48 hours, really.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're the owner of things like Friends and Harry Potter.
Wow.
And all the DC universe, all the IP that's under the Warner Brothers umbrella. That's pretty unbelievable.
Wow.
Paramount was looking to buy the entire company.
Okay.
That included CNN, TNT, TBS, Comcast was pursuing it as well. They were looking for HBO Max. Ted Sarandos, the CEO of Netflix, struck this deal, $72 billion. So now Netflix is a real behemoth. They were a giant before. But this changes things.
Everything is going to be, Netflix eventually at this point.
You won't have to buy cable. No. You won't have to buy, you'll just watch it all on Netflix.
On Netflix.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. Meanwhile, we are following what's happening out at Detroit Metro Airport. Delta Airlines experiencing a network outage affecting the operations at McNamara. That ground stop still in effect, according to Detroit Metro, at least on their Twitter. We are working to get in contact with them, but they've obviously got their hands.
They're a little busy right now.
We're working on it. But as of now, that ground stop is still in place. They put that message out about a half hour ago. So the initial report was started at 5 o'clock this morning. Mm-hmm. Computers were down. And as a result, all incoming and outbound flights from Delta to McNamara were out. They were grounded. It started at 5 o'clock. They said it was going to go till 7.
Yeah.
And there was a chance that it was going to go past 7. And obviously here we are at 7:38. And they are still reporting that this outage is taking place. So it is a bit of a headache this morning at the McNamara for Delta.
Actually, it says it's since been extended to 8 a.m.
Okay, so now we're under the 8 a.m. umbrella. So
yes.
This ground stoppage until 8 o'clock at mm-hmm. McNamara with Delta. This Delta is the only one impacted, by the way.
Yeah, because that's the only airline that flies in and out of McNamara.
Yeah, so Delta is the only airline being impacted at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Metro saying that they're going to continue to share information. So that's the latest on what's happening out there.
And it doesn't only affect Delta Airlines flights, but also includes the Delta subsidiaries as well. So
yes, anything under the Delta umbrella.
You guys are affected.
Yep, exactly. One of the things that broke yesterday was this investigation from the Inspector General at the Pentagon on this Signal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, there was... The United States carried out a military operation really early in the Trump administration in his second term. And a lot of high-ranking officials were on this group chat
mm-hmm.
on Signal. Signal is this encrypted messaging service. So Pete Hegseth was on there. Vice President J.D. Vance was on there. Tulsi Gabbard was on there. Mike Walls was on there. A number of folks were on there. And they were talking about the military operations that were going to be carried out in Yemen, these strikes.
Right.
And things like everybody's in place, we're ready to go, we're going to hit this at this time, blah, blah,
mm-hmm,
blah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some pushback when it became apparent that there was a reporter that was included. Somebody invited a reporter from The Atlantic
right.
onto this.
Mm-hmm.
So the reporter was seeing everything that was going down, wrote a big expose about it.
Should I be seeing this?
Broke it and even grappled with the idea of, should I release the information that I saw?
Right.
And eventually did, because there was pushback from the administration. We weren't talking about war plans. It seemed like after mm-hmm. the subsequent release of those messages, they were talking about war plans.
Yeah.
So this Inspector General report revealed that, in fact, there was a possibility that this sensitive information put troops in danger, that this information that was classified all of a sudden became declassified,
mm-hmm.
and that the Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth broke the rules here. They noted that Hegseth had other classified devices he could have used to provide details about the Yemen strikes to national security leaders. Pentagon policies largely prohibit the use of Signal for sensitive updates. But if you rewind the tape, go back to the Biden administration.
Yes.
They released a best practice form, and Signal was on there as a way to communicate with other government officials,
mm-hmm.
as a best practice. This report says that the Pentagon shouldn't be using that. The Pentagon shouldn't be using that to relay this information.
Because, I mean, look what happened. A reporter got on there, you know, was inadvertently brought in. Now, maybe if that reporter wasn't brought in, you know, nobody would have known what happened. Doesn't mean that you still should not use Signal. But the reporter was linked in, and that's what made it public to everyone else that this was going on. And, you know, had a foreign power intercepted the messages, I mean, it could have really jeopardized the service members, you know, on these missions. Luckily, it didn't.
Hegseth's messages in the Signal check, which were created by Mike Walls, who was the National Security Advisor, were set to auto-delete after a period of time. So the Pentagon could only provide a partial copy of Hegseth's messages.
Okay.
So they went away. So this is just some of the stuff that was turned up in this investigation. Look, to me, I don't think you should be using Signal in the first place. Regardless, if you are, hey, how about you double-check that you don't include somebody who shouldn't be on there.
Right.
But that's the part that boggles my mind.
But his family members were on there too, though, right? Wasn't his wife on there as
there
well?
There were family members. And yeah. I think he had like a personal attorney, things like that.
Yeah.
Nobody who shouldn't be privy to that information should be on that.
Absolutely.
And that's where the ridiculousness of this, in my mind, played out. Don't put these people on there. And if you're, you know, Mike Walls, who was tasked with putting all these people on, how about a double check before you hit send? Make sure that you're, you know, getting the right person on the chat.
Don't you do that when you're sending an email usually?
Yeah, I sure do.
Yeah.
I make sure it's going to the right person.
Of course.
Now, there are times, like the other day, I sent you a picture of my son's slippers that he puts at the edge of his bed so that when he gets out of bed, he can put them on like he's an old man. I meant to send that to my mom, but I sent it to the show.
Yeah.
Accident. My bad. Nobody cares. You guys don't care about
uh-oh.
That.
Top secret information.
Grandma does, but you guys don't. So I'm like, oops, not supposed to be too. You know, it happens.
It does. But
Pete Hegseth ain't dealing with slippers of a 3-year-old.
No.
He's talking about a military strike in Yemen.
And this is important stuff here. Yeah.
So that's where my problem entered the fray, is you're just not being due diligent enough. And then you potentially put our troops in harm's way.
True.
And that's the problem.
Yes.
All right, we'll take a break. Usher, Big Sean, collaboration at Michigan Central.
Yes.
We'll talk about it next on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning. On a Friday, in Detroit's creative economy is getting a major boost. Boys and Girls Clubs of Southeastern Michigan teaming up with Big Sean and Usher to launch the new Detroit Entertainment Innovation Incubator. That's a $1 million investment from the two alumni committed to opening doors for the next generation. The incubator will be housed inside the Boys and Girls Club of Southeast Michigan space at Michigan Central. It'll feature a virtual production studio, a special effects lab, a creator's lounge, and more, giving Detroit youth hands-on access to the tools of the future. And joining us to talk about what this means for young creators and for the city's talent pipeline, Sean Wilson. He's president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Southeast Michigan. Sean, good to speak with you, man.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. You know, let's just start with the big picture here. I mean, what does it mean for Detroit youth to have someone like Big Sean, like Usher, two Boys and Girls Club alumni, reinvesting $1 million back into the city where their creativity, you know, at least Big Sean's began?
Yeah, man. So, you know, what I love about it is it sends a really powerful message, you know, to these young people, in many ways. First and foremost, it sends a message that, you know, each of us have a responsibility to give back, you know, and lift the next man, the next woman up, you know, as we become successful. So I think that's number one. But then number two, I think it sends a powerful message too, that, you know, the work they're doing and what they're doing is not charitable, right? It's
right.
an investment in them. And you invest in people you believe in. So them making $1 million investment in the future of our youth basically says, we believe in you. We know you have the talent, and we understand that all you need is, you know, are the tools to be able to activate that talent, right? Become inspired, find your purpose, find your passion. But more importantly, because you can do that all day, you can help young people find their passion. But then if you're not giving them the tools, right, you know, it kind of goes unfulfilled.
How did this come about? Lloyd and I were talking in one of the breaks, and are both Usher and Big Sean, they're both alums of the Boys and Girls Club. So how did this come about?
Yeah, so, you know, so the beautiful thing is, you know, myself, Usher, Big Sean, long-time relationships. You know, I lived in Atlanta for 20 years, and I'm a co-founder of Usher's Foundation, you know, helped him and his mom start it. So we've been partnering for over 2 decades on different social impact issues, which is beautiful. I came here to Detroit, worked for Ford, and now obviously Boys and Girls Club. Had an opportunity to start to work with Sean and his mom and the Sean Anderson Foundation. So this was just an opportunity to bring these relationships to together for a very special impact moment.
You know, you've partnered not just with Big Sean and Usher, but, you know, also institutions like Michigan Central and Emory University and Illich Sports and Entertainment. How do these, you know, very different partners kind of work together to build one pipeline for young talent?
Yeah, so the one thing I've learned is that resources follow vision, right? And when you have a powerful vision of providing the youth of Detroit with such an amazing space, you know, think about this space. The space is going to be a place where anything they can dream up, any world that they can dream up, they can basically build, right? Using Unreal Engine, using the technology or whatnot, really learning about 3D animation and AI. And so in order to do that, that's a powerful vision. But in order to bring that to light, you need powerful partners. And so, of course, you got the Usher and you got the Big Sean, but then you have one of the most innovative places in Detroit right now with Michigan Central. And then you have, you know, amazing corporate partners like Illich Sports and Entertainment that's bringing not just financial resources, but also industry resources. Because once again, this is not charity, right? This is an investment in the future. So if you really think about it, it's very smart for them because the same skills, same technology that we're using is what they're using. And so if they want to build their future workforce, right, an investment in the young people today is an amazing start. And then when you look at the business side, because we are focused so much on the power of the technology that we're bringing to the table, but you also have to provide those young creators with the business skills. How do you monetize these skills that you've developed, right? How do you own your own IP? How do you, all those different things? And that's where Emory Glazetta Business School comes in.
Well, it's a big deal, and it is going to be great for the youth here in the city of Detroit, and we're glad that the Boys and Girls Club of Southeast Michigan is behind it. Sean Wilson, President, CEO, always appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank
all
you,
right,
guys.
Have a
great day.
You too.
Meanwhile, you know, Jamie isn't here today.
She's not?
She's not here today.
Oh.
She is. She was en route to Beantown, going to Boston.
Yep. Until
she wasn't. And she is at DTW right now, trying to get out of there, trying to get to Boston. Jamie, hi.
Hi, guys. How are you? I'm coming to you live from gate A72 of the McNamara Terminal.
Okay. You're through the front desk. You're through security. You're at the gate.
Yeah, so we came here at 5:30. We didn't have any bags to check, and we just breezed through. But we're like, why is it so not busy? And now we find out that there's a problem with Verizon, according to the lady just at our gate, and it's only at the McNamara terminal. So that's why there's a ground stop for all Delta flights right now.
I got a picture
sent
to me by somebody. It looks like a Coachella concert at the check-in gates. There is just a massive humanity for people waiting to get in.
It's more Fire Fest.
That's good. That's exactly right. So there's a problem with Verizon that's causing the computer outage. So what are you hearing at the gate then?
Have they told you how long this is going to go?
Well, our flight was supposed to leave at 7, and now we keep getting texts that it's 8:30, but it's almost 8, and there's no movement here, so I don't have high hopes. But I know people on the other side, and they're not letting people through, and people just keep arriving for their flights, and that side of the airport continues to get busier and busier.
Well, the person who texted me this, that they are en route to Hawaii, is the plan.
Uh-huh.
They have a connector flight, but they're afraid they're not going to be able to hit that connector flight, and that they were hearing from folks at the gate or at the check-in that they might start canceling flights.
Oh, wow.
So that's a problem. Delta, Jamie, you mentioned it, that they've said this is only at McNamara, this is only for Delta,
mm-hmm.
But they are, what, 8 o'clock now was the time that they're talking about this getting back?
But
they might push that back, too.
Yeah.
It seems like they're going to push that back. And I can tell you morale is dwindling, but so far everyone's really nice at A72.
Good.
Okay,
very good.
That's good.
Get a coffee. Get a snack. Buckle up.
All right. I'm going to go search for a mimosa.
There you go. There it is. Jamie, have fun in Boston. We'll talk to you.
See ya.
All right. Hopefully they get these people out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. 8 o'clock hour coming up on JR Morning.
All right, so it's 8:05. We're tracking the story at Detroit Metro Airport.
Jamie's through.
Jamie's at the gate. She's on her way to Boston, allegedly. We'll see. God, I hope she gets there.
Yeah.
But Detroit Metro Airport, as of an hour ago, their latest statement was this network outage at the McNamara terminal has grounded outgoing and incoming Delta flights to McNamara. They said initially it was 5 to 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
They pushed it to 8.
It's now been extended to 8:30.
Okay. 8:30 now.
Mm-hmm.
So now to 8:30. So maybe we're getting closer.
Yeah.
Maybe we're getting closer. Somebody sent me a picture, and at the check-in, it is just shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot move. Somebody sent me a picture, and they said, haven't moved for an hour and a half. So it's a holding pattern out there.
Pack your patience, man.
Jamie's at the gate, so she got through a little earlier.
Yeah, her flight was supposed to leave at 7, right?
Correct. And now they're saying, I think she said 8:30, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they're tracking towards that.
Yeah.
But Jamie tells us that it's a Verizon issue. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep you up to date on that. 8:30 now, the time frame here for Detroit Metro and this this network outage at McNamara. So we'll continue to watch that. Meanwhile, Lloyd, I love this idea. You know, Bedrock is taking over the plans for the Rensen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, GM is out. They're moving into the Hudson's facility.
Yep.
And so the question was, okay, well, what are we going to do with the Rensen? Well, now we know they're going to take down a couple of those towers. They're going to expand the riverfront, which mm-hmm. is the renderings look fantastic. Well, now there's a new idea. Jared Fleischer, who is the new CEO of Bedrock, said that they're looking at a marina at the Renaissance Center. A
lot of boats around here, man.
A lot of boats. Of course there is.
You know, when you go to a concert.
We're on the river.
When you go to the concert at the Aretha or Shane Park, whatever you want to call it.
What do you call it?
I call it Shane Park.
Okay.
But when you go to Shane Park and watch a concert, you know, the water is right behind the stage. They're boats.
Right.
Just right there.
It's awesome.
Listening to the show.
Yeah, it's great. So they're talking about potentially building a marina there, which would be very cool. And I think that would add a whole new element.
It would.
To that area. Problem is this really kind of won't be getting going until 2027 after the Final Four is here.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the Marriott there at the Rensen, they got 1,200 hotel rooms.
Yep.
They need those
mm-hmm.
for the influx of people that we're going to get in. So this isn't going to happen anytime soon, but these are the plans. These are the things that they're noodling around with. I think it's a absolutely great idea.
And Dan Gilbert has committed $1 billion to the project.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. Also, yesterday, the admiral who was testifying to Congress, Admiral Frank Bradley, who is the one who ordered the strikes on that September 2nd
mm-hmm.
drug running boat that needed 2 strikes to mm-hmm. take out, that he testified to lawmakers yesterday that there was no kill them all order from Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, that was never an order from him. The order was to eliminate the target, eliminate mm-hmm. the threat.
Yes.
The first strike took out the boat and took out most of the people. There mm-hmm. were 2 survivors. And according to the testimony that lawmakers heard yesterday behind closed doors, that Admiral Bradley said that it appeared that there were communications with another vessel nearby.
Yes.
To potentially come get them, get the contraband,
and
whatever
continue
it was.
On to do what they were
correct
supposed to do.
Yeah. And so that was the reason that Admiral Bradley gave the order for the second strike.
Mm-hmm.
So it maybe provides a little bit of clarity, but I think lawmakers are still wanting more answers.
Well, and it depends on what lawmaker you talk to. Some say it was totally lawful. Others say there's, you know, they have still have questions. So, you know, I'm trying to understand how you get those both, you know, those two different angles when you have the admiral there saying the same thing to both of them.
Well, they just carried out another boat strike.
Yeah.
Their 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that they're obviously going to continue with, even in the wake of this report from the Washington Post. And now the testimony from Admiral Bradley.
We spoke with Sean Wilson of the Boys and Girls Club of Southeast Michigan to talk about the $1 million being donated by Big Sean and Usher for this incubator that's going to be inside of the Michigan Central. But there's also something going on in Detroit schools on the other end. At Cody High, there's a group of violence interrupters from Force Detroit. They're showing students how to prevent conflicts before they escalate. The program, called Detroit Keepers, launched last year with city funding and embeds trained mentors in school to teach leadership, conflict resolution, and community responsibility. And students meet three times a week in lunch groups, playing basketball and participating in roundtables, learning how to act as junior violence interrupters. They also get guidance on helping their neighborhoods, from food drives to job assistance programs. And the initiative comes as the state allocated $10 million for youth violence prevention, with Detroit using $2.6 million to support programs like Shot Stoppers, which fund the Community Violence Initiative group citywide. And leaders say embedding mentors in schools builds trust and equips students with skills to make safer choices. And Force Detroit reports early success with students stepping in to de-escalate fights and mediate disputes, proving that teaching empathy, leadership, and accountability can make a real impact on young Detroiters.
Yeah.
Getting them on the front end.
No doubt. A great initiative.
The back end, when they end up in the Wayne County Jail.
Right, they're in trouble.
In juvie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, thank God we got one of these.
It's a damn good win, guys. Tells us who we are. Nobody, man. We write our own story. We've said it all along. That's a way to show up, man. It's a way to show up. We do what we want to do and how we're going to do it. You guys showed up. Was it perfect? No. Do we have a lot to clean up? Yeah, that's a good win, man. That was a hot team, right? And that's one down. We got another one to go after this. But we get a little breather here.
Yeah.
We get just a little bit of breather, all right? Which is all good.
I'm ready to go into the weekend now.
Let's go. Let's go.
I'm ready.
I love it. I love a locker room speech by Dan Campbell after the win. It's great. And, you know, somebody who we didn't know who was going to be available or not was Amon-Ra St. Brown yesterday. Yeah. He was dealing with an ankle injury after that. He didn't come back early in that game against Green Bay on Thanksgiving. He did play last night, had a big game. He talked about the win.
Yeah, I think this was a big win for us. You know, we've been kind of winning and losing these last, I don't know, 6-7 weeks. So this was big. This was the first step. Take care of this week. We'll enjoy for a few days and then, you know, get back next week to a really good opponent, probably maybe one of the best in the league right now, playing really well. So we got another challenge coming up. But for us, man, it's, you know, we feel like we can win every game in this league. It's just a matter of, you know, us putting it all together.
They put it together last night.
They did. They all came together, and I think it was a great team effort. Still some things they need to fix.
Sure. Yeah, you know. Certainly. Certainly some things they need to fix. But Dan Campbell talked about this in his postgame presser, is that they didn't panic.
No.
Right? As fans, we panic.
We did. Yeah, we did.
That's our job. To go, we're playing the little violin. This is sad. This is not where we thought we'd be in December, but here we are. Like, that's our job. Inside, no panic.
None. And they have 10 days.
Get it done. They got it done.
And they have 10 days to heal a little bit before we go in and take on Matthew Stafford.
Matthew Stafford and the Rams. Another must-win game.
It's a big game.
Got to go get it. Speaking of going to get it, Michigan State is getting it on the hardwood. We'll talk to Tom Izzo next here on JR Morning.
Every home uses energy differently, and Consumers Energy gets that. That's why My Personalized Offerings is your one-stop shop for tailor-made energy assistance. From payment plans to energy-saving programs, it's designed to meet your household's unique needs. Just log into your account at consumersenergy.com, click My Personalized Offerings, and answer a few quick questions. It's free, no risk, and only takes minutes to unlock custom money-saving rewards. Count on Consumers Energy to deliver smart, personalized solutions for your home. Welcome back to JR Morning. Well, with all the headlines focused on football coaching shakeups, it's easy to forget there's still some serious basketball being played in East Lansing. And this weekend, all eyes shift back to the hardwood. Michigan State gearing up for one of its most anticipated matchups in years, a Saturday showdown against Duke. And that has fans buzzing and the stakes sky high. And joining us to talk more about this matchup, WJR Sports analyst Steve Courtney, with a guest, the coach himself,
yes,
Tom
indeed,
Izzo.
Lloyd, good morning to you. Happy Friday, everybody. Yeah, it certainly was an action-packed week on the banks of the Red Cedar. Everything good, by the way. What we'll do right now is focus on what went down Tuesday night at the Electric Breslin Center. Your Michigan State Spartans open up Big Ten play with that 71-52 win over the visiting Iowa Hawkeyes. Let's see here. Three players in double figures, nine different Spartans scoring, and this team is trending in major categories very well for the Big Till tomorrow. Let's unpack it right now. Coach, how you doing?
Wow, that was a hell of an introduction. I'm doing great, Steve.
We saved the best for you, Coach.
always a top shelf effort.
Love it. You know, everything's going all right here. You know, it's a little cold up here, and yet 72 in the gym. So, you know, we've had a good couple days of practice. It was a pretty good last 30 minutes against Iowa after we got a little bit punched in the mouth early, and I think our team is responding to things, and you know, those four juniors and seniors have really stepped up.
The college basketball world knows, Tom, you know, how you feel about your team being able to take care of the glass. In that department Tuesday night, 37-18 advantage on the boards. That includes 13 offensive rebounds, which led to 21 second chance points. When I say controlling the glass, and I just gave you that number, that's the eighth straight game that your team won the board battle. Again, a nice trend.
It really is. You know, it kind of goes with our theme of defend, rebound, and run for, you know, now 20, 30 years. So, you know, it kind of shows you toughness sometimes. Sometimes it shows your aggressiveness, and I think it's really been good. So I will continue to do that, and hopefully our team will.
Yeah, that was the thing that jumped out at me, guys, is, you know, Iowa had one dude in double digits. Mm-hmm. I mean, defensively, it was a really nice job by the Spartans.
Yeah, I thought, you know, they've got a great player in Sturts, and we did a pretty good job on him. And yet, you know, Iowa did not play as well as they had been playing. They were 7-0 coming in, ranked 25th in some polls. And, you know, I think some of it had to do with us. Some of it had to do with maybe their first real road game, you know. And that's kind of what happens in this league. The Breslin was electric. And for that, I'm totally grateful to our fans, who I think have helped us enormously already this year.
Coach, what
you're
going to
play basketball in East Lansing. You're going to play defense. And that being said, for the Big Ten opener, keeping that Iowa team, and like you say, Tom, they came in 7-0. They were kind of off the mark a little bit. But meanwhile, defensively, you hold them to 37.8% from the floor. Pretty damn good.
Well, I mean, that's still how you got to win games. I don't care if it's football or basketball. You know, you got to be able to defend. What we did a much better job of than we had done the last two games. We got to the free throw line and we shot almost 90%. So that was encouraging. So if you defend, you rebound, you make free throws, and you get to the line, we're still, I would say, moving up to a decent shooting team. I wouldn't call us a great shooting team by any facet, but we are making progress even in that area. And the defense and the rebounding keeps you intact, even the offensive rebound on some missed shots.
You're taking on Duke tomorrow, Coach, and some people calling this the toughest non-conference test you'll see all season. How do you approach a game against a team that's really loaded with a lot of talent, but they're also young?
Yeah, you know, they've been young, though, for years, and we haven't been able to crack that. At least at home we haven't. We've gotten them a couple times at their place and some in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, it is a big game, and it's kind of what college basketball is all about. I tell our players this is a privilege. You know, you get to play one of the top teams in the country, one of the top programs in the country, and I'm really happy that our fans are going to get to see win, lose, or draw. They're going to get to see a quality team who's done it over years, and even though Mike's gone, John, who I recruited some, has done a great job, and I think he'll he's got a very good team. They're a top five team with an incredible player in Boozer. I mean, it seems like the last 3 years they've had three great players and number one picks, and this guy will be following in those footsteps.
How about Cameron Boozer? The dude is 6'9", 250 pounds as a freshman. Boy, did he show up in their thrilling win over the Florida Gators Tuesday night. He's got a brother, Caden, who's 6'4", 205. He's a freshman as well. We know who got the last piece of pizza there.
He is, but he's a little smaller. And, you know, Cameron is unbelievable. I mean, he can score it. He can shoot a three. He can post you up. He can put the ball on the floor. And maybe one of his greatest assets that people don't appreciate is he's a phenomenal shooter. And or passer, I'm sorry. And he really passes the ball well, so he's a hard guy to double team because he picks you apart. So, you know, we're going to throw a couple things at him, including the kitchen sink.
I mentioned that a lot of good things going on in East Lansing, Tom, this past week. Pat Fitzgerald on the scene Tuesday night. I think he interrupted a couple of your huddles, for crying out loud, but he's got a lot of passion.
He brought his very calm demeanor to the brass.
You know, he this is how he is. And then there's a major announcement in East Lansing, 10 o'clock this morning. A lot of good things happening, Tom.
Well, there really are. And, you know, we're due for that. And in saying that, I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, almost apologize to Jonathan Smith. I mean, I think yes. When things go wrong, it's you know, it's usually a group effort. It's not one person. And he came in under some tough situations, and then changing of the guard with our president and AD and all the things, and, you know, ran into some tough times with some injuries and that. But I have great respect for Jonathan, and it's hard to cheer on Pat, which I'm going to do now because I've known Pat for a while. I have great respect for what the job he did over there. And but it's it's always at somebody else's expense. So kudos to Jonathan, and I wish him all the luck in the world because he is a good football coach. This circumstance, this situation that we have to assume some blame for too, by the way, and that's all of us. So bringing Pat in, I do think it was like a WWW wrestler, you know, when he came in there. He scared me in the huddle when he went out there. You know, that's what he is. I mean, everybody has their own way of doing things, but I think he's a fit for us. I'm hoping that we all jump on board, all the Spartan fans, because we all have an obligation. We don't win games here just because of our team. We win because of our home court advantage. In hockey, they're showing that is back, you know, standing room only crowds. So we have to do our job in Spartan Stadium to help that become a home field advantage, which helps you win a couple games maybe you wouldn't have. So I hope we all take a responsibility. Football is king. It's got to be good. And I think this guy can lead us that way, and I'm excited about helping him do that.
All right, for the record, to end here, I'm taking responsibility. Meanwhile, high noon tomorrow, number 4 Duke at the beautiful Breslin Center, number 7 MSU. What a tilt it's going to be. Coach, thanks as always for the time.
Well, guys, I appreciate it and all you do for us. And let's hope we play well and see what happens tomorrow.
No doubt. Let's go get him, Coach. All right. Thank you. Appreciate you, Coach. Stevie, good stuff as always. I'm excited for this announcement, too. This is going to be a good one.
Huge. Absolutely huge.
Yeah, and this For Sparta initiative, you're talking about $1 billion to revamp the athletic facilities. Yeah, it's going to be some really good stuff. We look forward to what that announcement is coming up in just about an hour and a half. Stevie, have a good weekend.
You guys do the same now.
Hey, make sure you're listening at 8:49. We've got tickets for you to Monty Python Spamalot coming to the Fisher Theater January 27th through the 31st. We'll give you an opportunity. All you need to do is be caller number 9 at 800-859-0957. We'll do that at 8:49, so make sure you're listening.
That ground, the information, the situation at the airport has now been extended to 9.
Till 9 o'clock. So seems like they're kind of pushing it in half-hour increments.
In half-hour increments, yeah.
But that system, that network outage that's down at the McNamara terminal, this is only affecting Delta. Now they're saying that this is pushing till 9 o'clock.
Till 9 o'clock.
So still flights grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Both incoming and outgoing.
Right.
Delta flights at McNamara.
And their subsidiaries as well.
Sure, Delta sure. Everybody under the Delta umbrella.
Yes.
They're at McNamara. Meanwhile, Lions get that must-needed win yesterday. They beat the Cowboys last night 44-30 at a raucous Ford Field. Let's go inside the huddle with our Lomas Brown, brought to you by CNC Heating and Air Conditioning. They're offering a free carrier high-efficiency furnace with the purchase of a high-efficiency AC system. So, call today, 800-MY-FURNACE, or visit cncheat.com. That's cncheat.com. Low, what an atmosphere it was last night. Gibbs doing Gibbs things, and they get the win.
Oh, man, it was awesome. You talk about the ultimate game of complementary football. Offense, defense, special teams all came together, all made big plays when they needed to make big plays. That was a huge, what I call, playoff victory for the Lions. It keeps us in the race. It keeps this season intriguing. It was just what we needed, man, and it was at the right time too.
And you know that front seven, low. I mean, you know, because the pass rush had been kind of quiet. You know, with only I think like 4 sacks in the last month, but last night. I mean, 5 sacks against Dak Prescott. You got Muhammad, who had the hat trick with 3. You got Jack Campbell. Shoot, he was like a one-man wrecking crew out there. 12 tackles, a sack, a forced fumble. I mean, they were on the ball last night.
They were, and I'm going to start off by giving Calvin Shepard all the credit in the world, because what they did, Lloyd, too, they mixed it up. They showed Dak Prescott and that offense different looks. I mean, you would have the 2 linebackers, they would walk up in the A-gap. He would bring a safety down at the end of the line of scrimmage. You know, we would have 2 defensive linemen in there. Sometimes we would have 4 defensive linemen in there. It was just a masterful job of Calvin Shepard changing things up and just showing Dak Prescott different looks. And you're right, when the guys had their one-on-one matchups, they won them.
Mm-hmm.
They won those one-on-one matchups, and that's what you have to do in games like that. Just so proud of the way the defense played. Like you say, coming up with sacks, hits, pressures. I think Aiden Hutchinson had 10 pressures, 7 in the fourth quarter alone, man, and came up with the timely turnover when we needed. So it was just great to see that defense get after that Cowboys offense.
Lo, you and I were talking at an event earlier this week, and we were talking about Amon-Ra, and we didn't know if he was going to go or not, if that injury, that ankle was going to keep him out. My goodness, he looked fabulous last night.
Yeah.
Didn't look like it was bothering him at all. I mean, and he was a real weapon for them offensively.
The heart and soul, that's what I call him. He's the heart and soul of that offense, of the team. He's a warrior, man, and you're right. When we needed him the most, he stepped up for us big, big time, man. Like I say, as a quarterback, you have to feel the confidence and you have to feel the security to know your guys are going to be where they're supposed to be at. And that's what he feels when Amon-Ra's out there. Man, the guy was just so clutch, big plays that he made. And Jarrett, man, Jarrett looked good last night.
Yeah.
Well, Jarrett was putting the ball on. I mean, dropping dimes,
yeah.
Chris and Lloyd. I mean,
yes.
That ball was humming out of his hand last night.
But, Lowe, I thought the offensive line did a much better job last night, especially as that game went
on. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. I mean, those guys in the middle. And think about it now. We rotated. You put a rookie in there. When I talk about Miles Frazier, he was a rookie that got playing time. You had Tate Rutledge in there. You started off with, I'm just forgetting the other guy's name, who we started the game with. But they rotated those guys in there, and that was the strength of Dallas' defense, was right up the middle with Quinnen Williams and the big fella from Green Bay. That was their strength, and we handled it, man. I didn't hear their names hardly at all last night. It was hardly any middle pressure on Jerry. I'm telling you, man, it was a great, great job offensively, defensively. And, you know, I know we got to give Tom Kennedy some love.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some love, man. That little fella, man, he's been in and out, off and on this team for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Special teams, it's no way you could keep him off the special teams, because he was the one that was setting us up. Every time we needed a big return, he gave it to us and gave our offense the field position that we needed.
You know, Lo, you spent years blocking for, to me, the greatest to ever do it, Barry Sanders. Last night we watched Jahmyr Gibbs. He rushed for 3 scores. He bringing that career total to 47. That ties Barry for the most touchdowns by a player in his first 3 seasons in NFL history. When you look at Gibbs' run, Lo, especially when he gets in that red zone, you see some of that same ability to make defenders miss in a phone booth like you saw with Barry, or is he just kind of carving out his own unique type of style for himself?
You know, I think he's carving out his own unique type of style. Barry even said it himself, the similarities that he see in them is that vision, but that speed is unlike anything that you see, you can see. And the thing that impresses me the most, Lord, is the dude can run hard in between those tackles. Everybody thinks he's a sprinter type of guy and he doesn't bring that power. But, man, he runs hard. I mean, a couple of times he was hit, broke like 3 or 4 tackles to get in the end zone, dragging people in the end zone and stuff. Yeah, I mean, willing himself to get in that end zone. He is so explosive. He is such a weapon for us. And don't forget his running partner. I thought David Montgomery
absolutely.
Was just as big last night. Yeah, 6 carries, 60 yards. I thought David was just as big as he was. The tone set on that offense also. So, I mean, the combination of those two, but Jahmyr, he's a different cat because not only can he give it to you in the run, he can definitely give it to you in the passing game,
well,
too.
Well, I thought their game plan initially, like, they broke their tendency. Their tendency is run the football, set up the play action pass, and take shots down the field. They came out of the gate firing the ball out of Jared Goff's hand. So that then set up, it seemed to me, set up the run.
And then
that's where they were able to have the most success. I loved it. Back against the wall, high pressure, trying to make the playoffs, and they responded really well. And now they got another tough test
coming
up in 10 days.
Easier. It doesn't get easier.
No, it doesn't. And that's what the NFL is all about, particularly at this time of the year. We got to make that trip out west to face Matthew Stafford, who hasn't beaten us since he's left here. So, you know he's going to be chopping at the bit. And you talking about a front four? Man, they got a nice front four there on their defensive side that we have to face also.
Lo, you're the man. Have a great weekend and enjoy watching some football on TV. And we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Have a great day.
You too.
That is Lomas Brown here on Inside the Huddle on JR Morning. We'll take a break, get you some good news, what's popping around the area this weekend. It's next on JR Morning. All right, 849 needs you to be caller number 9 at 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Up for grabs, tickets to Monty Python's Spamalot coming to Fisher Theater on January 27th through the 31st. It's the Tony Award-winning best musical comedy, Spamalot, that gallop into the Fisher Theater January 27th through the 31st. It's ripped off from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and this show has everything that makes a great night at the theater. From flying cows to killer rabbits, British royalty to French taunters, dancing girls, rubbery shrubbery, and, of course, the Lady of the Lake. For a bonus chance, you can text Spamalot to 800-859-0957. Official rules are at WJR.com, and tickets are also now on sale at BroadwayInDetroit.com.
It is chilly outside. Going to be chilly this weekend, but doesn't mean you can't find something great to do around Metro Detroit this weekend. Who best to tell us what's happening? Jer Stays joins us now. He's the host of the Daily Detroit podcast. Jer, what's going on this weekend?
You know, I don't have any flying cows for you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I love flying cows. I love Monty Python, but I have none of those for you.
Okay.
But I do have three great things. So Handmade Detroit's 20th annual Detroit Urban Craft Fair is happening this Saturday and Sunday at the Masonic Temple. There's more than 100 indie makers. The Crafty. There's the Detroit Derby Girls helping out as volunteers. Admission is just $5. And it's just a great way to support so many crafters and creative people in Metro Detroit. It's just, you know, a good chance to go visit the Masonic Temple and see stuff. Because, you know, usually when you're going for a show, you're like, you're in and out. But for the craft fair, you get to check some stuff out. So I think it's pretty cool. And then also on Saturday is Merry Midtown with more than 50 different spots. You know, Noel Knight's been around for a while, but that's not happening this year. So the merchants are getting together, and there's ice carving demonstrations, carolers, mobile phone booths, Christmas tree on stilts, Santa Claus, a bunch of stuff in the heart of Midtown. If you want to go ahead and take a look at that, just check it out, like Canfield and Cass, really cute area of town. So there's two things. And then my third involves downtown Rochester. So the Kris Kringle Market is over on West 4th Street, and that is a European-style Christmas village. I wanted to highlight that because, you know, it's something a little bit different on Friday and Saturday. There's hot spice wine, there's fresh wreaths, there's local beers, there's music, a Santa's village for the kids, and a portion of proceeds go to support nonprofits. And here's the other thing. You can get this thing called Dresden Stollen there, which I've never had. I guess it's like a moist fruit cake.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of a moist fruit cake, but I'm definitely down to try it.
Down to try it. Good stuff.
All right, Jared, thank you so much. Always giving us great stuff to do for the weekend.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right, you as well. Feel Good Friday. It is Feel Good Friday.
It's Feel Good Friday.
What do you have?
We got some feel good stories, too.
You got something?
On tap.
What do you got?
How about this story? Mesfin Yanadollar grew up in rural Ethiopia, where he contracted rheumatic fever. It's a preventable illness that damages the heart so severely that if you do not have surgical intervention, you could die.
Okay.
Well, Ethiopia, being the relatively isolated country it is, mm-hmm. does not have the facilities to perform open heart surgery. So Mesfin relied on an act of kindness from an American surgeon who arranged for him to travel to Atlanta for these operations. There were multiple surgeries, and Mesfin remained in the U.S., eventually training to become a perfusionist, which is somebody who aids doctors in heart surgeries, open heart surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
And today, Mesfin Yanadollar works alongside the very doctor who saved his life.
Wow.
He helps others undergo complex heart procedures and really kind of drawn the attention of rheumatic heart disease and mm-hmm. the problems that it causes, particularly in low-resource communities that just don't have the infrastructure or the money
yeah.
to perform these types of treatments. And so you go from this doctor, you know, finding you,
mm-hmm.
bringing you over, mm-hmm. performing these surgeries, saving your life, then
you
full circle, you now
them.
Work with them.
That's wonderful.
Pretty unbelievable.
That's a feel-good story. This week, scientists in the UK offering a fresh reason to smile in the fight against one of the deadliest cancers, pancreatic cancer. For decades, this disease has carried a grim reputation, with most cases diagnosed too late for treatment. Over 60% of patients in the UK are found at stage 4, and survival beyond a month at that stage is, you know, pretty rare. But now researchers at Imperial College London and Pancreatic Cancer UK are piloting a groundbreaking breath test that could change everything. The test being trialed in 40 locations across Scotland, Wales, and England with 6,000 patients works by detecting tiny chemical compounds in a single breath, molecules that can signal pancreatic cancer even at its earliest stages. Diane Jupe is chief executive of Pancreatic Cancer UK. She calls it the most significant step toward a life-saving breakthrough in 50 years. She explains that while it's still very early, thousands of patients participating in the trial will help refine the test, bringing it closer to general use by doctors across the country. And for a disease often discovered too late, the simple breath test offers more than a moment of scientific achievement, it offers hope in early detection and the chance to save countless lives. It's a reminder that even in the most challenging battles, innovation can light the way. A breath of hope in the fight against pancreatic cancer.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
yeah, innovation.
It is. I mean, that's the big deal with pancreatic cancer is testing. By the time you find out, it's usually stage four.
Usually too late.
But a breath test?
Unbelievable. Just, again, wanted to update you before we get out of here. Marie Osborne's going to come in and for All Talk and keep you updated. But the situation out at DTW continues to linger. This outage at the McNamara terminal affecting Delta flights. Grounded both incoming and outgoing. Started at around 5 o'clock this morning. They pushed it till 7, then 8, then 8:30. Now it's at 9.
Yes.
So those that are picking up, dropping off, getting to the airport, it is an absolute mess there currently.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll keep you updated on that as we approach the 9 o'clock hour here in just a couple of minutes. That is going to do it for us. Lloyd, have a good weekend.
You as well, my friend.
And we will see you all next week, 6 to 9 here on JR Morning. Have yourself a good